Hello and welcome to Nine Inch Charge. Welcome to the Old World Show. Welcome, Tom.
Hello.
We are back and we're going to be talking Bretonians again because, Tom, you've been painting some Bretonians in some form or another lately, haven't you?
Yeah, I've been painting some mini Bretonians. Got some mini Bretonian cavalry.
Oh, they're so cool, aren't they? So those they're the Forest Dragon 10mm range.
I think a lot of them are, but I think we've printed them. We've obtained the STLs? Yeah, yeah. Files and printed them ourselves. Got the Trebuchet. It's not so mini. It's like the same size as a Space Marine, kind of mini. And some poor peasants.
A similar size to the original Field Trebuchet. It's always looked a little bit too small for my liking.
And some peasants.
Oh, nice.
So I've got loads going on.
I've been having a bit of an itch for Bretonians lately because I've been watching Nightfall on Netflix, which is all about the Knights Templar searching for the Grail in France and fighting off the French army and all that sort of stuff. And it's got Mark Hamill in it, who plays a similar role to what he plays in the newer Star Wars films, actually. He plays like sort of the wise old guy who knows it all, I suppose, like the old, sensei isn't the right word, master, isn't it? Like the master, and he trains all the initiates in how to use, well, not the force, but swords and things.
Yeah.
So that's been giving me an itch to play Bretonian. It's making me miss my old Bretonian army. I'm going to try and recommend it to Jeremy, because as we know, he's got something like 4 of the Bretonian army boxes just sat still in their shrink wrap on his shelves. So I think if he watches that, maybe that might be the motivation to get him to open them.
It might be that with a little bit of contrast paint. He'll be flying.
Well, at the moment, he's just saving them up for his retirement. There is life savings at the moment.
What happens when they bring out a better Bretonian range?
Can't be done.
Yeah, shots fired. Shots fired, everybody.
Okay, so what we're going to look at specifically today is something that a little while ago a subscriber got in touch with me on Facebook. Mer Watts got in touch with me. So thank you very much, Mer, for this. And on the article on Warhammer Community, First Look at the Map of Bretonnia, there's a video where they fly over the map. And the picture of the map is not very high resolution, but the video is much higher resolution, even though it's quick. And what Mer has done is they've taken all the still frames and identified all the regions and provinces and the lords of the regions and provinces, or the dukes.
So I thought, sleuth stuff.
Yeah, very cool. So I thought what we'd do is we would just have a talk about all the regions that we've seen. There's quite a few to get through, so we're going to have to try and do it at pace, because I think there's more than 10. But we'll talk a little bit about each one, what we like about them, what we know about them. Obviously, we don't know too much about what's going on in this time frame, but we know what they were like from Warhammer Fantasy Battle and World at War. So I'm going to kick us off with the first one, which is Baston, and that is where Luan Orcslayer himself rules. It was also where Giles the Breton is from. So it's kind of like the old capital. And lots of visiting nobles go there to visit Giles' personal Grail Chapel. And almost all Grail Knights have been there at least once. And it's from there that I guess the scene was set for the game where Luan Orcslayer launches his errantry wars against the Greenskins. If it's Giles the Breton's castle, and we know that the game is set around there, do we think a certain green knight might turn up?
I think they're going to do a green knight. You can't do the Bretonians and not do a green knight model, can you?
Like, well, it's such an iconic model. especially now the capital is where Giles de Breton was from, and whether or not you consider End Times lore as canon, there's some people that do and some people that don't, but I think Games Workshop certainly do. You know, that makes me think that there might be something about that that we see, and I'm hopeful that there is something there that we see.
Yeah, it'd be a great chance for them to really expand on the lore around that. So,
yeah, I'd love to see some more lore around Giles, because when we did the video about Bretonian units and heroes, Giles was my absolute favourite one that we spoke about. And I know that actually now it's probably going to be more about Luan Orcslayer, but anything we can get to connect back to Giles or to the Green Knight would be a big win for me.
Yeah, so it's also the cultural home. Just gonna, I'm not even gonna lie, I'm just reading this off the wiki of the Bretonians. So it's got a cathedral of the cult of the lady. So it'd be interesting if they do like specific region rules. You might see a little bit of a buff to the enchantresses.
Yeah, the enchantresses.
Enchantresses, the damsels.
And the handmaiden of the lady, the lady will probably be there. I think that you're right. I think that you're right. As we go through the list of the provinces and regions, I think we will start to see their character, and we might think that there might be some certain rules. So they might have, you know, there are certain regions that are overrun and might have a particular hatred of greenskins, or there's certain that specialise in knights in particular. And there's a region that's split off and they might specialise in Pegasus. But we'll keep going through them, because as I said, we've got to try and sort of be as quick as we can.
Yeah.
So the next one is Caron, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Sorry to any French people if you're watching, because I'm going to absolutely just murderise the pronunciation of a lot of these places. But the Duke there is Duke de Essex. And in Warhammer Fantasy Battles, this was the seat of power of the King's Royal Court. So this is where Luan Leoncourt reigned, and this is what is going to become the new capital. So even in comparison to the other dukedoms, the land of Caron is said to have some of the greatest horsemen from within all of the realm. And on the map that it shows, it's surrounded by orcs, and they're all coming down up from the Pale Sisters Mountains. And the city of Caron itself is pictured as being in flames, and has been kind of besieged by the orcs. Which is really interesting, because it's something that in Warhammer Fantasy Battles we thought of being kind of the pinnacle, because it was where Luan Leoncourt was from, and it was where, you know, his seat of power was. It's the new capital, I guess, that would have moved from Baston to Caron. But in this time, it's besieged and ruinous and on fire and all the rest of it, even though they've got the greatest horsemen. There's not a lot they can do, and that could potentially have been the rally cry for Luan Orcslayer from Baston to come to the aid of Caron. So two important provinces there straight away, with links to heroes who we know and love, you know, Giles and Luan. So I don't know that maybe they'll do a tie to some of Luan's ancestors or something like that, potentially.
Could write a few characters in. That'd be very interesting.
Yeah, I'm not expecting necessarily anybody playable, but just something in the lore would be nice.
Yeah.
So next is Gizero, and that is Duke Gwyneil the Brash. So this is one of the founding dukedoms, and it lies under the treacherous slopes of the Pale Sisters and upon the low woodlands of the Arden Forest. The Arden Forest is of particular interest to me, because it's where the Wood Elves are fighting a war against Beastmen, a secret war where Morgan the Corruptor is reborn in that forest. So these guys have got particularly bad, because actually there's a growing colony of Beastmen down for the Pale Sisters in the Forest of Arden, and they're surrounded by orcs. So they've got it twice as bad, I suppose, as everyone else.
Yeah, you wouldn't want that, would you? You don't want, you really don't want wood elves like hanging around, because they get up to all kinds of tricks, and beastmen are just bloody nasty. So,
yeah. But in
especially
this case,
when you're at...
in this case, the Wood Elves are helping out because they're fighting against the Beastmen. It's not. I know there are times there's regions in the south where when Orion is reborn and the Wild Hunt happens, sometimes it just bursts out of the forest, and then he just like him and Wild Riders would just like go through towns and villages and just like yeah. slay everyone because that's just they're just on a rampage, like a bloody rampage. But in this case, the Wood Elves are a little bit more cool and calculated, and they know what they're doing, and they're a bit less primal, I suppose.
Yeah.
But they don't know even though that they're there. So by the end of this saga between the Wood Elves and the Beastmen, the forest is renewed from tree sap from the Oak of Ages, and the Bretonians revere it as a hallowed and sacred place, but they never really know why it's so magical and why it's such a stunning forest after it's all said and done. But at the moment, that isn't the case. It's a creepy forest full of beasts. So the next dawn is the Langweel, and that is ruled by Duke de la Mer. And Langweel is interesting. It's right on the very northern shores of Bretonnia, and it's got some of the most busiest ports that they have there. It's funny because the Empire sailors from Marienburg kind of see it as a try-hard or a wannabe Marienburg, and they like to kind of take the mick out of it because it's not as big a vast port kind of state as the Free State of Marienburg. And there's a quote here I've got from a Marienburg sailor who says, they want to be more Marienburg than we are. I hear some of the merchants even want to dam the Senez so they can have their own swamp. So they're just like, it's like a replica, I guess, and that's what they're trying to do. But what's interesting about this is that on the map, there are all the different seaports for the high elves. And
yeah.
this will be where you know, the elves and the Lodden Sea Guard and all those kind of people will be seen, if they're seen in the world. There will be trade is open with the High Elves, and they'll come through Longueuil if they come through anyway.
Now, if you were going to write some interesting rules, I want to bring it back to the game for a bit. Would you allow an army from Langweel to take 102 Lover and Seaguard? Maybe not like a whole unit, but like five, a little unit of five.
I wonder what they'll do with allies and things like that. From my opinion, although Finnabar the Seafarer has been out and is currently the Phoenix King, and he's established all these ties with the old world, with Bretonnia and the Empire and the Wood Elves and even the Dwarves, I still think that the High Elves are a little bit standoffish, and it isn't up until 100 years later when we get the war against Chaos that the Elves will actually step in and fight alongside Bretonnia or the Empire. I'd like to see something. I mean, even if it's just heraldry, I mean, wasn't there a... I swear that one of the knights had like a fish on his helmet or something like that. I swear there was one of those. So even if it's a bit of heraldry or something like that, I don't really know. I mean, Bretonnia aren't known for being a seafaring nation, really. But this is an interesting part of the lore, I suppose. But if there were going to be allies, I think you're absolutely right. If the port was under siege, which it, you know, a lot of Bretonnia is from Orcs and Goblins, I don't know that the Sea Elves would just get on their ships and pack away. I think maybe the Sea Guard there's a chance they might fight alongside.
Yeah, they might pick up a shield.
Ultimately, and this is something that I spoke about with Ben in the High Elf episode, is that actually the High Elves know that they're a dying race, and they know there's less and less of them, and their energy is kind of fading from the world. And they're not able to fight Chaos and fight the Dark Elves and all these different fronts on their own anymore, like they were when they had all the dragons. Because now there's not very many dragons. So actually, it's really important for them to strengthen and solidify their relationship with their allies. If their allies are strong, then they're strong. So maybe in that respect, they might do. But I still think we're 100 years away from that fully happening. But
yeah,
we'll have to see what they say, I suppose.
I just thought it'd be an interesting question.
The next one is Lyonesse, and the Duke is Duke Le Grand. And this is another coastal region, but it's not really famous for trading. It's really famous for the infighting amongst its nobility. So there's a lot of backstabbing, and it's a bit kind of like Game of Thrones, I suppose, where everyone is kind of out for power and out against each other. There's a lord from Artois, which is the next region that we'll cover, who talks about them. He said that if their duke cared to unify them, they'd be unstoppable, but he can't decide if that would be good or bad, really. So they're kind of best left alone, best squabbling, but there's kind of a lot of political intrigue there, I suppose. And I think that would be a good setting for if you had some friends and you... say, let's say the starter box was Bretonnia and everybody bought it and everyone had a Bretonnian army. How cool would it be to do a little campaign set there? And then you fight amongst yourselves for the dominance of the realm of Lyonnais.
That would be cool. Like a Necromunda style, not quite Mordheim. Good old bar brawl style campaign. That would be awesome. I think that would make a really good like narrative pen and paper RPG game. That would be interesting. You know, try to take control of the city using political power instead of swords and shields.
Like spending your influence. Weren't you able to do that in what was it called? You bought the expansion.
Triumph and Treachery.
Triumph and Treachery.
Cool. Yeah.
That would be really cool.
That would be sweet.
Lyonnais and Triumph and Treachery, and then spend your influence and buddy up with people and gang up on someone, and then have to eventually turn on your allies and things. Do you know what? I'm getting kind of excited for that. I want to do that.
Yeah, that sounds like a good game.
So next is Artois, where they brew all the Stella.
Ah, nice.
And the Duke is Duke Artois. So famous for being the only dukedom that is covered entirely by forest wilderness, and that is the Forest of Arden. And one of the merchants from Langueil, I've got a quote from them, and they say, "There's fine timber to be had in the forest, but never go and get it yourself." There's not too much more to say on this, really, because we've already spoken about the Beastmen and how Morgra is being reborn, how there's a massive army there, and how the Beastmen are growing in power, and they're going to be overrun, and that sort of stuff. So I think they probably have got enough on their hands that the whole area is covered in forest. But I mean, I suppose with the orcs and goblins, we are going back to a time that they're not in the range at the moment, but where there were forest goblins as well.
Yeah, that would be fun. Could see them come back.
Yeah, because you're fighting orcs and goblins, they're just fighting the greenskins. It's not only going to be orcs, there probably are going to be forest goblins living in Artois and beastmen and all sorts. So, really interesting place. And the forest goblins are a unit that I'd really like to see return, actually. I think they have a lot of fun and character to them.
I try to think about the models, but yeah, I know they were awesome. Like, a lot of that range was really cool. The forest goblins, and you had spider riders, and
because they were part of that, and now they're in spider man. But I'll tell you what, actually, I've got a box that I'm going to paint up, or I might get Ben the Base to paint them up, because he's Golden Demon finalist winner of Forest Goblins from Shield Wolf Miniatures. And they're really worth checking out, because they're a really cool kit that fit together, and they're a multi-part kit. They kind of like remind me of the old Games Workshop stuff, where instead of like where the model fits together, it's like halfway up the arm and then, or halfway down one leg. It's just like
it's
body,
just the arm.
Arms, arms, head, and you can have bows or spears or swords. So they're really good, and they're worth checking out.
They sound brilliant.
No, honestly, have a look at them. They're definitely worth checking out if you're interested in old school green skins. Yeah.
Let's have a look. Let me get excited about this. We're not cutting this out as well. We're keeping this in. That is sick. They are cool.
I'll put the picture up, because it won't be fair otherwise.
Yeah, you don't get to enjoy this. This is for me. This is, I want these. They're boss.
You'll like these next ones because this is something that we spoke about when we did our wish list of unit types a little bit. So the next one is Montford, and Duke is Duke de Montford. And the Dukedom of Montford is a founding dukedom that lies upon the eastern borders of Britannia along the central spine of the Grey Mountains, stretching from the Gisero Gap to the north and Axbite Pass to the south. The Dukedom of Montford acts as the central buffer between the lands of Britannia and those of the Empire, so they protect the way through the mountains. Almost all of Montford lies within the Grey Mountains, with very little arable land. Such communities living within Montford are seasoned mountaineers used to the harsh environment, constant threat of breeze being raised all along its territory. And that's something that we spoke about before, about how our Britannia is very, it's all well and good them fighting the orcs that come down from the mountains onto the flat plains, but how are they going to take the fight to the Greenskins up in the mountains?
They've got to get climbing at some point, don't they?
Yeah, so we might see a new unit type here or something like that, because they're all mountaineers. You know, they might have more skirmish type units, more units that are easy to get over difficult terrain. That's kind of a rule that I suppose you were saying, what would you have if you had a Montford army? I would say that they could pass difficult terrain tests easier and things like that, because they're used to the mountainous climbs. And this is what we want to see, is we want to see if you are going to launch an infantry war against the Greenskins, you're going to have to go to the Greenskins. You're not going to sit and wait to say, oh, I'm declaring war and then sit and wait.
Yeah, like, I'm going to wait to fight them on the plains.
This is kind of like, I don't want to go too much into like magician stuff. It's a little bit like what we did in the Second World War, when we declared war against Germany when we were just at war for ages and nothing really happened. There wasn't really a war. But, you know, that's not going to make for a good game.
It's called the phony war for a reason, isn't it?
So Montford, I think, I'm hoping to see a unit from Montford, and I think that they are going to be key in the war, the entry war.
Yeah. Very true.
Next is Paravan, and again, they've got a speciality as well, which is one that is really cool. So Duke Paris or Paravan the fourth is the Duke there. And the Dukedom of Paravan, again, lies in the Grey Mountains. But nearly all of its castles are built on the cliffs and peaks along the mountain range. And at such high altitudes, it's particularly noted for having a large number of Pegasi and Pegasus Knights among their ranks.
That's sick.
So
Pegasus Knights is called.
But you can kind of see it, that the cities are so high up and on these cliff tops, and then when they get besieged, the Pegasus Knights just like charge off. What's the bit in Lord of the Rings or the White City where the guy's on fire and he runs like and falls off? Except they're not going to fall off; they're just going to take off. That's like their runway. So in my mind's eye, like every city in Paravan has got like a flight deck of an aircraft carrier that's like scooped at the front, and all of the Pegasus Knights run up the scoop and then go flying off in the battle.
That would be nuts.
I wonder if they'll do a ranged unit. I know that the Britannians aren't famed for it, but if you're flying around up there, it's a good opportunity, or at least a mage on a Pegasus, and then they can fire spells down.
Oh, no, because they don't. I don't think the Bretonian knights use bows because it's not considered honourable, is it?
It's not chivalrous enough for them. But there would be magic, I thought. But mind you,
yeah, maybe magic.
You don't need to rain down. It's just a wood elf in me thinking about that raining down.
Everything needs a bow.
You don't. Yeah, you don't need that when you've got a lance that you can just pierce stuff with. Yeah. Just go down and scoop some up like what was the comment?
The Nazgul.
I can't remember who wrote the comment, so apologies. But you'll know who you are. They were talking about having a noble with a lance and making like a kebab out of enemies. And I think that's probably what they do. They'll come down, poof, there's a kebab.
Mushroom skewer. I'd love to see that. But you could have the. I was going to say, you could have the Eagles themselves or the Pegasi themselves carrying rocks like the pterodactyls or the pterodons do for the lizard men.
Yeah.
Drop massive boulders on people.
I guess we haven't spoken about hippogriffs. Yeah, Luan the Encore used to ride a hippogriff. And actually, there's been no speak of them whatsoever. And I wonder if there'll be. There must be some there if there's Pegasi. I don't know that we'll see. I don't know if they'll go kind of full Age of Sigmar and do a whole unit of Hippogriff cavalry. But they did Demigriff cavalry. So I don't really see why you can't have them. So
they should have gone to the Praetorians.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just saying.
It's a wrong that needs to be righted. The Praetorians need it. It's absolute madness. But if they got Hippogriff cavalry, they could kind of put two fingers up to Demigriff cavalry. They'd have to be smaller, I guess, than the main.
Yeah.
So next is Morzadon. And Morzadon is a really interesting place. It's the cursed and impoverished land that's plagued by constant misfortune, disease, and it draws the attention of dark powers. This is the place where they had the affair of the false grail, which is 100 years later, where he pretends he's got a grail. And we remember we were talking about Monty Python? So I told them we've already got one.
amazing.
So, and actually in Warhammer Fantasy, it's much smaller, and a lot of its land was seized and taken away from it because they just can't be trusted, basically. But at the time where it stands at the minute, it still owns all of its lands, and it's still big, and it was once revered as being a fair and kind of beautiful land, but it keeps like getting besieged and having plague. So I think there's a bit at the end of the False Grail where chaos demons come out, and I have a feeling they're Nurgle demons, which then is plague again, but there's already undead. So, and the Lord of Morzadon is I don't know if it's ever officially confirmed, but it's always very strongly hinted at that he's a vampire.
Very nice. That'd be very interesting to explore that.
So lots of cool stuff going on there. But it's not really the place that you think of when you think of Britannia, because they're not very chivalrous, they're a little bit devious, they're very downtrodden, they're not one of the main dukedoms. But there's really a really, really great opportunity. And I have seen and played against an army like this, a converted kind of undead army led by a vampire, which would be very cool. All right, we're getting on to some of the cool ones now, some of the ones I really like. So the next one is Bordeaux. It's not Bordeaux, it's Bordeaux.
Not Bordeaux.
Yeah, not Bordeaux. And the Duke there is Duke Andelagar, I think it's supposed to be eighth, but they've written it IIX instead of VIII. So it was going to be 12th, or maybe it's going to be 8th. Someone doesn't know their Roman numeral. But I think that actually is how it is in the video. So they'll have to go back and edit their map, because that's not quite how Roman numerals work. but Bordeaux, much like the French region of Bordeaux, which I'm sure it has nothing to do with.
Oh, no. There's no parallels in any of these names at all.
It is the largest exporter of wine within the entire kingdom, and it's full of vineyards and things like that. And it has a reputation that even peasants and nobles alike are able to drink wine, and it costs a third of the price as it does in any other land. It makes me think of going back to Monty Python and the Holy Grail again. You know the scene where they go, Camelot, and then it pans to Camelot. And they're all the nuts just dancing on the tables. like they're all just pissed up. That's what I think of Bordeaux.
It's a busy life in Camelot. I have to push the pram along.
No, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.
So, and the other thing that I learned about it, just doing a bit of reading about it, is there's a funny tradition, or I don't know if it is a tradition, but this is what people say about the inhabitants of Bordeaux, is that if their birthday ends in a zero, so if they're 20 or 30 or 40, for the day, they'll sober up. And other than that, they're just constantly drunk for the rest of the time. But that's if they can remember or even know that it's their birthday, I suppose.
That sounds like the place to be.
Yeah.
I bet no one's going to let...
I was just thinking, they must have so many grails there from all the wine they're drinking. The Holy Grail is probably just there, just lost in someone's drinks cabinet or something.
Someone's just drinking out of it. Someone's dipping into the beer keller green with the Holy Grail.
A reference no one will get, but I appreciate
it. If you get it, if you know what beer keller green is, good on you.
Yeah, good on you. All right, Dan. Next up is Aquitaine, and the Duke is Coridon. So this is the western coast of Bretonnia, and it's known for having some of the most tranquil lands in the entire Old World. It's full of farmland and gentle sandy shores, and there's no real threats there. There's no real invasion, not a big green screen presence. There's not a big beast man presence. There's not too much going on. However, due to its amount of tranquility, it's known for feuds between nobles because they don't actually have anyone to fight except for themselves. So it's such a shame because it could be so peaceful and tranquil, but because they're not fighting off green skins or going off to war against so-and-so, they just fight amongst themselves, and to the point where even like there's peasant revolts against the nobles and all this sort of stuff is all going on.
Oh, damn. Can't have that going on.
So there's a quote here from a Tellian mercenary who was brought over to fight. And he says, almost no monsters in Aquitaine. Even beastmen seem to stay out. Fusing nobles, gangsters, rebellious peasants, cultists, serial killers, and protagonists in abundance, though. I'd like to see... cultists, I'd like to see that, and I'd like to see highwaymen or something of those that kind. Then I think if they were cultists, I wonder what kind of cult they would follow, because I don't know too much about Bretonnian religion, obviously, other than the lady. But in the empire, they don't all worship Sigmar. There's all this Tal, and there's all the different gods, all Frick, and all these kinds of things. And I wonder if we'll see a bit more of that in Bretonnia, where, you know, maybe there's more, although the lady will always be at the top, there's more of a pantheon, and you might get cultists from up, or they might be chaos cultists, you don't know.
Could be. It sounds like chaos has got a bit of a claw in some of the lands already, so, you know, with plagues wandering around the place, so there may be a cult or two at foot.
So next is Quenelles, and that is Duke Radamund III. And Quenelles is the region right next to Athelloran in the south, the one I spoke about before that the Wild Hunt bursts out into. And they're very wary of the forest. You know, people go in and they never come back. Or if they do come back, they come back 1,000 years later and all this kind of stuff. So they're wary of the border to the south. That is for sure. And also, they also have a bit of a time during the Errantry Wars, because Luan Orcslayer is going to be flushing all of the orcs out of the land. And there's nowhere for them to really run. And one of the places they do run is they run south and they run into Athelloran, and then Durthu defeats them. But to get there, they have to go through Quenelles. So it's about to be overrun by greenskins.
Yeah.
And even a fleeing orc, you know, is still going to want a wild on the way. They just fight. They just move from fighting one place to fighting somewhere else.
Yeah, doesn't really matter. Like, I think it's in one of the 40K books, but an orc never loses a fight. If it dies, it's won because it's done exactly what it needed to do. And if it doesn't and runs away, then it gets to fight another day. So that's brilliant.
This isn't the first time they've been overrun by green skin. I know it has happened to them before in the past. And actually, these people have unreserved hatred for raiders and barbarians.
Yeah.
and green skins alike. They're a little bit, I suppose, a little bit like the Wood Elves in a way, where they're a little bit kind of xenophobic to people because they assume they're going to be raiders and barbarians and things. They're quite an interesting people. But for me, you know, people watching may know more about this, but for me, it was always this realm was always the interplay between Athelloran and the Bretonnia. And there's some funny stories. There was a, I don't know if he was a wild rider. I think he might have been a glade rider who came out into Quinnells and entered into one of the jousting competitions. He didn't win, but he entered. You know, there's all funny things happening there. So that's quite a cool one. And now we're on to the last two. So, first one is Brion, and that is Duke Gastiel. And Brion is kind of like the cultural centre, I suppose. So all the castles are beautiful in style, and they often just destroy villages and rebuild them for the latest trend. And as I said, all the castles are beautiful, but they're horrible in purpose. They're not built, the walls aren't built to withstand things. They're just built to look nice. And it's known for the arts and for literature and poetry and music. And that kind of is what it's famous for. It's just a very beautiful looking place. And it lies far away from any major threats. And that's why it's been able to do this and spend all its time doing that kind of.
That's very weird. It's not very Bretonian-y.
Well, I suppose not. It's not, but you still need a song to march to battle to, and they must write all those songs.
You do. What's the name of this one?
Brion, B-R-I-O-N-N-E. But I suppose also, who's going to record all the tales of good deeds? So when they talk about literature, poetry, and music, they're probably, you know, they're making tapestries and they are, you know, writing poems and songs. Even the Klingons, obviously it's got to be a Star Trek reference, will say, you know, songs will be sung of this day when they go into battle. So I guess Brion serves that purpose.
Very interesting. The town of Brion was built on High Elf settlement, High Elf ruins.
Ah, so maybe that's why they carried on it looking kind of beautiful and that style of architecture. That makes
sense. Very interesting. Oh, I didn't realise that. That's cool. It's... Next one. I've dragged that one on. Next.
The next one is the last one, actually, and it is Carcassonne. And that is ruled by Duke Anselet II. And Carcassonne is really cool. Really, really cool. So I'll read you the flavor text that I've got here about it. And I think you'll really like it. And I think it will make you want to repaint all your Bretonnian miniatures that you've just done, your little ones, or give them little flags for Carcassonne.
The best thing is about these is they're the same... heraldry, it's very similar heraldry to the first one we did, or the first and the second one where Louis de Encore's from. Red and blue, you know,
from Corone is where Louis de Encore.
Corone, he's from the Corona.
That's right. Yeah, so Carcassonne lies at the extreme south of Bretonnia, a highly martial dukedom, even in comparison to other Bretonian dukedoms. Carcassonne is heavily militarized and it focuses its efforts on eradicating the green skin tribes that manifest in the Arina Mountains in its southern border. Nearly all of its people, from the highest noble to the lowest peasant, is a warrior in both skill and spirit. Being a warrior is considered an expected trait within most Carcassonne communities. So, and also what's interesting about them is that they've got quite a close tie to Brion. So even though they're strong warriors, they do have an interest in music and things like that, and they've got a strong bond between those people, and they go on sort of pilgrimages to see the wonders of the cities and travel back to Carcassonne.
I really like these guys. Carcassonne's they sound really cool.
What's cool about them is when they go to Brion, they feel just as proud of all the wonders and things they've seen as the people from Brion themselves, because they believe that they are fighting the Greenskins and taking the fight to Bretonnia's enemies to make those things possible.
Yeah.
So the reason they feel like everything that Bretonnia has accomplished, you know, they played a big part in that by all being martial warriors. And there's a quote here from Duke Hubold, who is one of their famous dukes. And this is the longest speech he ever recorded, so sorry if I waffle on a bit. But he said, "We keep the orcs from the rest of Bretonnia. It is our duty, and we ask no reward but that we be allowed to do it. We are the men of Carcassonne, and we will fight." That's his longest speech.
Not one of a few words.
Yeah.
But this is really cool because they've got in their history, like, nobody else talks about this in any of the other dukedoms of Bretonnia. They're going and taking the fight to the Greenskins. They're wandering up these mountains and just sacking Greenskin settlements like it's nothing.
I suppose they must, when Lorne Orcslayer is like, says, "Oh, we're going to have a war against the Greenskins," they must be thinking, "Well, yeah, it's been going on for like bloody ages, mate. Thanks for joining in."
Yeah, there must be some serious gold coming our way because we know how it's done.
Yeah, so they're very cool, but there are some cool ones. So for me, Carcassonne is right up there. Who else did I think was really cool? I quite like Drunken Bordello. I want to see Undead Morzadon. I want to see Pegasus Knight from Paravon. I mean, there's loads. And I want to see something of the Green Knight from Bastogne. Plenty in here to be thinking about, to be digesting. Really cool that as they went over all these settlements, it just kind of reminds you of all the rich lore and flavour that comes from Bretonnia, because there are some places where they'll have their own regions and things, but they're ultimately quite homogenised. But Bretonnia, actually, the nuances are larger, I think, than potentially some of the other nations. So, yeah. Very cool.
Very interested to see. Do you think so? Games Workshop have been on their like crusade to protect their IP a bit. Now they're a bit on the nose, like medieval knights, aren't they?
Mm.
And you can get a Bretonnian army from just about any miniatures company ever now. Do you think they might try and do something to protect the IP a bit? Because you've got places like Carcassonne and Bordeaux and Bastogne.
I kind of hope, and I don't know that this is the case, but I kind of hope that they've come to the realisation that actually there is a market and an appeal for low fantasy, and that's what people want. And that's why, you know, things like the Ninth Age and Kings of War do exist, and people still play Lord of the Rings, which is a more low fantasy setting than Age of Sigmar. They did confirm, didn't they, that, you know, orcs are going to be called orcs, they're not going to be called orcs. So I don't know that will be the case, but you're right that there are a lot of, and especially now more than ever, we're talking about 3D printing and things like that. There are a lot of companies making things, and we talked about the Shield Wolf miniatures, Forest Goblins. But when Games Workshop put their mind to making miniatures, nobody's going to make miniatures that good. And I think that's what they can do. I think if they were to do Bretonnians, you're right, you can go and buy Crusader Knights from different companies and things like that. But I just think that the Bretonnian one, like when Games Workshop, if Games Workshop were to redo them, they would hopefully just knock everything out of the water. And I'm talking about, if you look at the Luminous Realm Lord Cavalry, I've never seen motion carried in a horse quite like that. And we're so far away now from putting a metal head and sticking like a metal tail into a plastic base, and the legs are just solid, like rooted yeah. to the floor. Like, we're so far away from that. And there isn't a company that I've seen, and I know some people have said that the horses look a bit goofy in the way they're kind of mid-stride and stuff, but I've not seen any miniatures company make horseback riders with that much motion in them, but Games Workshop have just done. And if they can carry that over to charging knights for Bretonnia, I don't think they'll have a problem with competition. The only thing they'll have, I guess they might for price point, because
yeah,
you know, it is expensive. I know it's just gone up by 5%, but it is an expensive hobby. That's the only way people will compete with them is on price. But in terms of models, I don't think
no. so. I agree there. I think that is a discussion for another video. I think it's a discussion worth having in another video. Yeah. Jot that
maybe
down.
Maybe we'll wait until we see like the first miniature and then we might go for it. But all right, Tom, so what's your province? I think I know the answer.
Yeah, we all know it's Carcassonne. Right. These guys are the knights. These are the ones you want.
All right, well, I'm going to leave you to read that. It's good to be back. It's nice to be recording an old world again. I know it's been a little while. We kind of seem to be doing them one a month at the moment, whereas previously we were doing them every week or 2 weeks. But, you know, that's life. Me and Tom got quite a lot going on at the moment. I've started a new job and we're all quite busy. But I think things are beginning to settle down now, and me and Tom beginning to hit our rhythm with our days off and stuff like that. So hopefully there'll be a lot more coming.
Yeah, I'm actually taking my day off.
I've got Jeremy recording with me on Sunday, so we'll see how that goes. We're going to talk about Dark Elf units. Oh, no, we're not. We've done Dark Elf units. We're going to talk about Dark Elf lore and why the Dark Elves are so interesting and sinister and nasty. And we're going to talk about elven pirates and slaves and hydras and witches and all that kind of stuff. And it's going to be a good one because the Dark Lord Malekith himself will be watching and commenting, I'm sure. So we're going to make it. All right. Well, thank you very much, everyone. Thanks for watching. It's good to be back, and we'll catch you next.